Good afternoon, everybody. We will call this Ways and Means Committee meeting to order. We do have quorum. It is Wednesday, April 22nd. We don't have a terribly heavy schedule today, but we do have some important bills that we will be moving today. I will start off by reading the safety statement. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives. We appreciate your interest and participation in the legislative process. To ensure everyone can view, hear, and understand today's proceedings, we ask for your cooperation in maintaining decorum and civility throughout this hearing. For the safety, security, and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, the committee chair, maintain control of these proceedings and establish the following expectations. Signs and play cards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in walkways and aisles or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodation, please speak with our sergeant staff. They are identified by the gold ties. Troopers and house security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. Those providing testimony will be giving specific time limits, which must be strictly observed. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it as it may be required for reentry if you leave the hearing room. Failure to comply with these guidelines may result in a removal from the hearing room. Our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while ensuring everyone the opportunity to observe and participate appropriately. Thank you for your cooperation and participation in the legislative process. Co-Chair Torkelson, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair. I move their approval.
All those in favor or approve of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, before we get started, I would like to say we are coming down on the final few weeks of session here. And Minnesotans are depending on us to deliver on some legislation that will be impactful in their lives in a positive way. Today we have some important bills that will do that will go toward doing just that. I'd just like to remind us all as legislators with elected election certificates, our constituents are depending on us, and we have had a tough year. But there's a lot that we can do within these final few weeks to make sure that we do some things to keep Minnesota moving in a positive direction and to help relieve some of the pain and harm that has been done to our community members across the state. With that said, first bill up is House File 1141. Chair Howard, I will move to place House File 1141 on the General Register. Please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Frazier. And perhaps before I present, I think there is a technical amendment that Co-Chair Igo
Thank you. I was going to ask, do you want to move that now?
Yes.
Representative Igo, you're going to speak to it?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I can move the A5 amendment.
Thank you for moving it, and please speak to it.
Yeah, so the A5 amendment is mostly technical in nature. You'll notice on line, page 9, line 20, we're just changing how the money is going to be appropriated from MMD on the dates and get the dates enacted in the right place so that it follows the agreement that Chair Howard and I came to in conclusion of the bill. So that's kind of the big change right there.
Any discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is in place. Chair Howard, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Frazier, Chair Torkelson, and members of the committee. Amidst challenging budget times and even more challenges that Minnesotans are facing, what we have in this bill is a strong bipartisan bill that will do a lot of good for Minnesotans. It's a testament to our work in our housing committee this session, where we worked on a bipartisan basis to really focus on our shared goals of addressing our housing shortage and the virtue that Minnesota is a better place when everyone has a safe and stable place called home. A few of the broad highlights of the bill before us. One, we're making meaningful investments that will unlock public-private partnerships to build affordable homes all across the state, both to rent and to own, and to help ensure families have housing stability in all 87 counties. Second, we're doing this in a judicious way with our budgeting, making these investments in a manner that are cost neutral in this budget and the next, in the tails budget. And third, we're including a set of fiscal reforms to provide more oversight and accountability and line of sight for the legislature to the Minnesota State Housing Finance Agency so that we can ensure that public resources are being used responsibly and responsibly. More specifically, this bill will authorize $100 million in housing infrastructure bonds, our state's bread and butter tool to build both affordable homes to rent and to own all across the state. This infusion helps keep our pipeline moving forward. We know that there's always more applications for these programs across the state than dollars are available, and so this helps us invest in shovel-ready projects that will create more than 1,000 homes across the state. Two, we're investing $20 million in the Greater Minnesota Workforce Program, a priority of Co-Chair Igo's and one that I support as well. This program specifically helps us build workforce housing outside of the seven-county metro area. We've heard all session and for years that this is a huge gap. The deals don't pencil out. This provides gap financing and ways to make sure that we're building that critical workforce housing in Greater Minnesota. We also include a $150,000 increase to our state's homeowner education program, HECAT, and $150,000 investment in a pilot project of Representative Zeleznikar's regarding senior housing. All of these investments are cost neutral, and we do that by redirecting $22.3 million in unspent interest earnings off of legislative programs within the Minnesota Housing Finance Authority budget or agency budget. So a word on this. Co-Chair Igo held an illustrative hearing that helped our committee take a look under the hood of MHFA's budget and to understand their budget and practices. And MHFA is different than other state agency budgets in that the legislature does not appropriate state dollars for their administrative functions and employees. Previous to 2023, the agency used their banking operations and earnings from their banking operations to subsidize state staff. But since 2023, the agency has used in earnings on legislative appropriations on resources that had not been expended yet. In practice, this is a good thing. It allows our state to adequately fund our state staff that are entrusted with program administration and program integrity. And I would note that MHFA has a very strong track record of program integrity, something that we've talked about this session. But that said, the surplus of the interest earnings right now is at a level that can more than adequately fund those staffing interests, and at a time with Minnesota facing immense needs, it's very judicious and appropriate to direct some of those investment earnings to the needs now that to help us build more homes and address housing stability. In addition to those investments, we're also helping ensure housing stability for families across the state by directing unspent dollars from the Tyler Housing Settlement to our state's Family Homelessness and Prevention Program. Or FHPAP. For a refresher, FHPAP is our state's primary tool to address housing instability for renters and homeowners that have fallen into housing crises. This is a program that serves all 87 counties, and we have specific language that these resources will only be used for the existing organizations that already have that strong track record within communities to get these resources out. And as a reminder, these Tyler resources, they will cancel back to the general fund if they're not utilized this session, and given their origins in sort of addressing housing instability, this is a judicious and smart way to utilize these resources. I would note a few non-budget items that do have fiscal relevance is are some policy items. To add more oversight, MHFA must notify the legislature when transferring resources between housing development funds and submit more information to us as a legislature in their annual reports. We're also tightening our statutes to ensure that the legislative appropriations cannot be used to support banking operations at MHFA. They've told us that does not happen, but this language clarifies that. I've already mentioned the interest earnings. We have a provision in here that directs the agency to more regularly return those interest earnings back into legislative appropriations as long as they have the required amount on a yearly basis to fund their staffing needs at the agency. That is the bill. I want to thank Co-Chair Igo and the members of our Housing Committee that worked all session in collaboration. We've found a creative way to balance the pressing, urgent needs before our state and do so in a tight budget and a tight legislature. And furthermore, these reforms, I think, are in the interest of more transparency and oversight and judicious use of the public tax dollars as well. So this is a good, strong, bipartisan bill, and I'd welcome any discussion.
Thank you, Chair. No testifiers, am I correct? Members for discussion, Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just kind of curious. I know that my district has Hilltop, which is a city that's mainly made up of manufactured housing. Fridley has a ton of manufactured housing. And we even in our small town of Spring Lake Park, we have manufactured housing. And so I've been hearing a lot from my constituents that, the infrastructure in those places is far, far beyond, deteriorating. And I've driven roads around Fridley Terrace in the winter, and you wonder if your car is going to get out of there. So I'm just kind of curious in this bill, what is being done for manufactured housing?
Chair Frazier,
Howard.
Cagle. Great question. Manufactured housing is our state's largest source of affordable home ownership. This bill, by including $100 million in housing infrastructure bonds, we can address some of those infrastructure issues. That is an eligible use. We did have a discussion in our housing committee. I think folks who have been working on manufactured housing haven't been satisfied with the level of housing infrastructure bonds that have went into manufactured housing. And we had a really good discussion in committee, and I think there's bipartisan interest to see that tool being used more for manufactured housing. So we're addressing it in that matter. There isn't any specific earmarked resources for manufactured housing within this bill.
Can you follow up, Chair Cagle?
Thank you. I really hope, too, that we can address the manufactured housing bill of rights as well. I think that's a really critical tool, especially when we see a lot of these private equity companies coming in and, doubling lot rents. We also have a co-op in my district, and so that first right of refusal is really, really a necessary thing so that we can build more co-ops and strengthen the equity in those manufactured housing parks. And so I really hope that we do allocate a good portion of funding through those infrastructure bonds so that we can start to, get these places back up to livable conditions.
Any follow-up to that? Chair Howard?
Just to say that it is disappointing that the manufactured housing bill of rights isn't in this bill. We did hear that in committee. It is one that didn't kind of fell on partisan lines, and we didn't have the support to move that out of our committee.
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Howard, thanks for doing this. I think the discussion that we had in committee, and there's members of the Housing Committee here, I just think that it merits a little bit of clarity because we got a letter from the commissioner saying that this bill will damage the relationship between the legislature and the agency. And I just want to level set. So the amount of money that is being used still leaves a tremendous amount behind. And the amount that we were told that had been accrued in just interest in the Housing Committee, and Chair Howard, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was $99.6 million in interest. And the discussion that we had in the bill that sits before you is a utilization of some of that will not negatively impact the ability for Minnesota Housing to do their job. But what it will do is it will take that amount that was gained in interest and put it into actual things that help Minnesotans. Is that a correct assessment as you see it there, Chair Howard?
Chair Howard.
Chair Frazier, Representative Nash. I think it is correct that we want to balance. We definitely want to make sure that our agencies have the resources they need to administer programs, and it's very true that when we passed our 2023 budget, we asked the agency to do a lot more with our historic investments in housing. But that said, we've worked closely with our fiscal staff. As we understand, it's about $80 million in interest earnings that currently exist now, and we're directing $22 million of that. And then, in addition, We have the provision in here that says on a yearly basis, we'd expect that the agency essentially take a look. What do we need for our staffing for the, and if it's an excess, should we return some of that? And to me, it's a wise thing to do. One other note, currently what it says in our statutes is that the agency should periodically return in investment earnings back to programs. And but there's no specificity that we don't define what periodically is or means. And so this is a way to, I think, provide a little more legislative direction on what should happen with legislative appropriations.
Follow up, Chair Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Howard, I just wanted again to direct members' attention to the letter that we got from Minnesota Housing that has effectively said in the last sentence of the paragraph that 4925 appears
is this
to be.
We're making sure we have this.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Let me know when I can continue.
Go ahead. Continue.
Okay. That in the letter that it categorizes that the relationship is being damaged. And having sat on the Housing Committee for a number of years with you and Chair Igo and Representative Agbaje, I don't think that that's true. I think, if anything, we work quite well with them in helping the people of Minnesota, and that $99.6 million of interest should not just sit there and wait to be operationalized on a rainy day or a what if, but that tranche of money should be put to use to benefit Minnesotans. And I recognize that day in committee was probably one of the better days that we had around the table, because we were all in, I would say, somewhat of disbelief as to the total amount of money that had been accrued in interest, and that we singularly believe that it needs to be put to use to help Minnesotans. So thanks to you, Chair Howard. And again, I just don't see it the way that the commissioner has put forward in her letter. And I just want to make sure that members who are not on the Housing Committee do not view this as an adversarial bill. This is a bill that helps Minnesotans.
Okay, Bajay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, normally Rep. Nash and I don't agree that much, but every once in a while we find an area of common ground. So I would just reemphasize Representative Nash's points. This is utilizing these funds that have been growing based on our historic investments, I think, is an appropriate use of those funds. We are also being prudent with how much we are using in order to carefully, you and Chair Igo have carefully crafted a bill to, you know, meet the needs of Minnesotans based on where we are today. And so I think that, you know, for folks around the table who are reading that letter from the agency, just to be mindful that this is not, you know, we're not doing anything extraordinary here. We're just trying to make sure that the funds that we have appropriated are being used in the way that continues to help Minnesotans achieve their housing needs. Additionally to this bill, I think I will say, of course, I'm always glad to see additional rental assistance. I'm glad we could do it now, even though I wish we could have done it sooner, but I appreciate the efforts to get us to a place where we will be able to provide that assistance to folks across the state who really need it. And of course, it's always good to see a significant, healthy amount to HIBS funding, and I appreciate the work you guys have done in that space. So thank you very much.
Chair Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, just want to just speak to it. Thank you, Chair Howard, for your collaboration on this bill and bringing it together. Speaking to the agency dollars there, I mean, this is something that I'm going to simply put as state taxpayers put money into this agency for programs that were decided by their elected representatives. All this bill is doing today is capturing those tax dollars, that interest on those tax dollars, and putting it back into programs that taxpayers want. And, you know, there's concern there from the agency, but this is our job as members of the legislature, whether we're Republicans or Democrats, to make sure that as we take taxpayer dollars and invest them into our state, we make sure that every part of it, whether there's interest earned or not, that they are spent towards taxpayer-initiated projects. And the project that these funds are going towards is going to build workforce housing all across the state of Minnesota, which you heard from my co-chair's testimony is one of our biggest gaps that we need to fulfill. And that's what we're going to make sure we accomplish. The six measures in this bill that are focusing on accountability and transparency in the agency is an important part as we get into the year of wanting to make sure that we don't ever see fraud, but most importantly, we understand how the agency works. It was said that Minnesota Housing Finance Agency is a very unique agency in our state government, being that they run an entire bank on the side of things. And this bill is going to make sure to ensure that funds are spent the right way. but it's also going to ensure that we can make sure that the money moves to where it needs to go and we are reported on that and that it stays in taxpayer-funded initiatives. It also works to cover costs, that interest will cover costs first before we start seeing taxpayer dollars used as admin fees and expenses. And I think that's a really strong message to push as a bipartisan legislature so that we can make sure, again, that those taxpayer dollars are used properly. My back-of-the-napkin math on this bill hopefully means we're going to build close to 2,000 units of housing. And to do this in a way that's budget neutral, I think is a huge, huge win for the state of Minnesota, and couldn't be more proud to work on and author this bill with my co-chair. And again, get not only just good funding for housing production, but also make sure we add accountability and transparency to one of our state agencies to make sure that taxpayer dollars are used as they are appropriated by the elected members of the legislature. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Co-chair Howard to close.
Thanks, members, for the discussion. Coach Arrigo wrapped it up very well. This is going to allow us to build homes and change lives for the better and do so in a way that is cost-conscious in our current context. I just want to comment. I do care very deeply about our relationship with the State Finance Agency, and they've I want to call it again, they've done an incredible job with program integrity. And we asked them to do a lot when we passed our 2023 budget, and they're implementing programs right now that are making a big difference. So we share the goal with the agency to making sure that they can continue to administer state programs and look forward to more conversation with them about it. We do think that this is a very responsible way to go about it, but invite those discussions and stay really focused on the end goal, which is how do we improve Minnesotans' lives, and a big way we do that is making sure people can afford a safe place to live. So thank you, members. Really appreciate the discussion.
Thank you, Co-Chair Howard. The chair renews his motion to refer House File 1141 as amended to be recommended for placement on the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion approved. You're on your way. Thank you. Up next, we have Chair Bang. House File 4372. Chair Vang, is your motion to recommend that this be placed on the General Register?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. In 2023, the Ag Committee created a program to help people transition to new communities and get trained in the art of meat cutting. The program, dubbed Train and Retain by MDA, has been a success, but the Economic Development Organization charged with administrating the grants haven't expended all the funds. This is a rather simple bill. It will provide a three-year extension offering between 1 or 2 year extension to individual projects. I did request a fiscal note, and there was none. It confirms that there's no cost to the bill. These grants to the development organizations have already been awarded, and MDA believes any additional administrative costs will be minimal. And with that, I do have a testifier, and proceed.
Testifier, please come to the podium. Are they... It's in person, correct?
Stu Laurie.
That's right. Please, as you make your way to the podium, introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Frazier and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie, Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. Submitted a letter for your packets and didn't anticipate testifying, but very much appreciate the opportunity. We're huge supporters of this program, helped create it in 2023 with the fantastic support of then Chair Vang, and we're grateful for your consideration of this extension. This is a program that comes out of lessons learned in the pandemic. We learned as a state what Farmers Union members have long known, that a consolidated system of meat cutting doesn't work well for workers, it doesn't work well for farmers, and it doesn't work well for consumers. And so MDA and others, Farmers Union, went around the state to small, local, regional locker plants. We asked those owners, what could it take for you to expand your capacity, process more livestock when the state was indemnifying those livestock? And they all said it's a shortage of workers. workforce. We, you know, it's me, maybe, you know, someone in my family, and so we need more support. And so we created technical training programs at the Minnesota State College System, and we also created this train and retain grant program. And this program is working. I actually have a Farmers Union member who I think is here today who's worked with a family who moved from the metro to relocate to St. Louis County. These grants help them do that, help this, them support that meat processor there. So a couple points in particular to the extension. This funding is already obligated, as Chair Vang explained, so it is already out, obligated to those economic development organizations. You know, the reason the extension is needed is both a slowdown in getting these projects up and running, but also just that we're asking people to make big changes in their life, and those things take time. So appreciate your consideration, and thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Mr. Lowe, we appreciate your spur of the moment testimony. Appreciate it. Members, discussions, any members? Seeing no members wanting discussion. Co-Chair Vang, close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a good bill. It will work to address the shortage of meat processing in our state, and I will renew my motion to re-refer this to the General Register.
Chair Vang renews her motion that this be recommended for placement on General Register. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? You're on your way. Up next, we have House File 3426. Chair Jordan, please make your way to the desk.
The baby binder. She calls it the baby binder.
Chair Jordan, I should have asked if you needed a hand. Prior apologies.
It used to be three binders.
Glad you're able to whittle it down. Chair Jordan, since you're not a member of the committee, I will move that House File 3426 be recommended for placement on the General Register. Please proceed with the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. This is the annual LCCMR appropriation. That stands for the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. And it's a committee that spends the proceeds from our lottery that go into the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, or ENRTF. There's a lot of acronyms, so if anyone wants me to repeat any of them, just raise your hand. And this is money from our lottery proceeds that was something that's overwhelmingly enjoyed by Minnesotans. They recently voted to renew the ENRTF in 2024, along with the Community Grants Program, and this is the first LCCMR bill that contains those grants for what is the Community Grants Program, which are intended to be smaller grants in nature and will be distributed by the DNR. This engrossment of the bill includes 108 appropriations totaling $102.036 million. This is about $1.25 million less than the 5.5 constitutional limit due to the removal of one project from the council recommendations and other accounting reasons. Subdivision 16 of the bill includes 11 extensions of previous appropriations. The total original appropriation amount for the 11 projects was $15.1 million, and the estimated amount being extended is $4.5 million. Section 12 appropriates $28.18 million for that community grants program that I just got done detailing the purpose of. This amount is the 1.5% constitutional limit for that program. This is the second year of funding after the constitutional amendment was passed by the voters in 2024. As of March 31st, the current invested balance of ENRTF is approximately $2.1 billion. And members, this bill does not have an effect on the general fund because, again, appropriations come from ENRTF or the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. I'm happy to take questions. I also have in the audience the director of the LCCMR, Director Becca Nash, but we don't have any necessarily anymore to go over, so that's what we got for you today. Happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Co-Chair Jordan. Member discussion, Co-Chair Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing the bill before the committee today. I did want to make a few comments. I think that the first thing I want to point out is that while generally non-controversial, there were a lot of conversations. I want to thank Representative Jordan for working with our caucus to try to address some of those things. There is a project missing. We don't need to have a long, drawn-out conversation today about that, but we were able to fix, I think, a problem for the path forward for this bill. Additionally, members, I think we also should mention that the Community Grants Program has approached its launch in a very novel way, in that we are preemptively bringing some statutory changes to how those dollars are be appropriated and avoid the opportunity for fraudsters to take advantage of this program. The OLA made a number of suggestions. We incorporated those things. And I believe we're going to have a very, very good program available to work on a variety of projects. That I think arguably brings more accountability, excuse me, than we otherwise would have had. So I'll leave my comments there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, thank you, Representative Jordan.
Co-Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. More generally, the proceeds for the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund come from proceeds from the state lottery. Has there ever been consideration on the projects or districts that a proportionality of the money from districts that put into the lottery that they receive a certain percentage back or anything like that? What have those conversations been like? I've never served on that.
Co-Chair Jordan, or if you want to phone a friend.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, I have not been part of those conversations. I don't know. I'm looking at Director Nash, who's shaking her head. I think one thing that I think is a great thing about the ENRTF is that it benefits all Minnesotans. There are projects in here that go to the University of Minnesota to advance scientific research to address PFAS mitigation and testing. There's been a lot of work done in here to fund RT-QuIC, which is a rapid test for determining CWD, which is a brain disease in deer that could have effects on humans. There's also parks and trails funding and outdoor recreation opportunities in every corner of this state. And so there is really something for everyone in here. We have like many categories between lands, fish and wildlife, energy. And so those projects go across the state. One project that I'm really excited about actually is in Otter Tail County, which is looking at how they manage waste management to be more, to find new recycling technologies. And that's nowhere near my district, but I'm still really excited about what we can learn about solid waste, which many of you know is a legislative passion of mine. But I really do think, you know, it is. I think that there's just something here for all of the school children in Minnesota, but there's also projects directed towards seniors, bikers, walkers, swimmers, fishers, anglers, campers, you name it. Someone in your district is taking advantage of this program, and it benefits all of us whether or not we play the lottery.
Any other questions, members? Seeing none, Chair renews the motion for House File 3426 to be recommended for placement on general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? On your way, Co-Chair Jordan. Up next, we have House File 4222. Representative Godfrey. Representative Godfrey, I will move that House File 4222 be recommended for placement on the general register. There is an amendment. Do you want to address that first or after your introduction of the bill?
We can address the amendment first. So, yeah, okay. So the A6 amendment that you have before you would add two very tiny conveyances from the Minnesota Historical Society to the Lower Sioux Indian community and, secondly, to the city of Marine on St. Croix. We did not add these amendments in the Environment Committee because these amendments were filed after the deadline, but we did present them in the Environment Committee, and as far as I heard, there was not any concern with these amendments when they were discussed. So happy to answer any questions about those or phone a friend if need be.
Representative Hyten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to speak to the amendment quickly before adoption. As Representative Gottfried stated, there was generally no issues with the amendment, but past deadline. prohibited or limited their being added to the bill at that time. And my understanding is that the properties in Redwood County and the section of land that was left out of the enabling legislation, it's not a new conveyance. So I just wanted that on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Co-Chair Godfrey.
Yeah,
Rep. Godfrey.
Oh, or not yet.
Rep. Godfrey.
That is correct. Yeah, thank you for that that correction, Representative Heintzman, Co-Chair Heintzman. This was a parcel that was erroneously omitted from the 2024 lands bill after legalese, all that sort of language was kind of sorted through. We realized that the legalese language that was used within it accidentally left that out. So this is in fact not a new conveyance. It is one that we're just trying to correct the record on from a previous bill.
I'm not sure if I should react a certain way you said legalese, but I'll let it go.
Sorry.
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to back that up. This land transfer occurred in my county, one of my counties, Redwood County. I participated in the original transaction. This really just clarifies, cleans up the language, makes it correct, and I fully support the transaction.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. Any other discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment is adopted. Move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so welcome to Lands Bill 2026 edition. So the aim that I have is to have a non-controversial no shenanigans bill that we can easily pass, from the House floor with bipartisan support. The bill itself includes some necessary updates on how the DNR manages land transfers. And this version, just to kind of go through the different list of projects, we already talked about the two that were as part of the A6 amendment. But additionally to those, it adds lands from the Frontenac State Park in Goodhue County and Great River Bluffs in Winona County. It removes land from the Mille Lacs Cathia State Park in Mille Lacs County. The land sales delineated in this bill include 4.3 acres in Becker County, 19.2 acres in Mille Lacs County, 0.4 acres in Pine County, and 6.2 acres in Wabasha County. In the Environment Committee, we amended the bill, adding House File 3911, which was carried by Rep. Warwis, which authorizes St. Louis County to sell two parcels of county-owned land. And according to our phenomenal fiscal staff, the two land sales net the state around $473,500 accrued to the land acquisition account at the DNR. So this does not actually go to the general fund. So the bill is amended, passed from the Environment Committee with unanimous support. And that's the bill. Happy to field any questions or phone a friend.
Thank you, Representative Godfrey. Chair Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, thank you, Representative Godfrey, for the bill today. I do need to ask that we delay moving the bill to the General Register. Like or similar to the amendment that we just added to the bill, there is an additional problem what some of you may be familiar with, Cuyuna, the mountain bike trail system. And we are hopeful that given a few more days' time, that too can be addressed within the lands bill. So I just wanted to make sure that we're clear on some of the challenges in today's committee. And while I'm hopeful that the lands bill will be successful, today's unfortunately not the day. Thank you.
Chair Heisman, I actually like the Cuyuna bike routes. They're very beautiful. For those who haven't gone up there yet, please go check them out. Can you describe what the issue is?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I can. So the issue that could be addressed, as I said earlier, in a similar way to how we address the issue with the Historical Society, is a 1/24th interest that could potentially take a section of the trail system out of use, and we need to get that fixed. There is a meeting this coming Friday that could bring some opportunity for that, Mr. Chair, and unfortunately, we're just not there yet, and I'm hoping that it will be successful sooner than later.
Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really have no idea why this has taken so long to be settled. It's been on again, off again, on again, off again for the last number of days and weeks. I certainly apologize that we thought this bill was ready to go today, but we feel this is an important enough issue to delay the bill. So I would like you to lay it over. Otherwise, we'll be taking a no vote.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you very much. I would just wonder, where is that in the bill? I'd like to see the underlying read the underlying language in the bill.
Mr.
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not in the bill at this time. It would be another amendment to the bill that is not ready.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Claiborne.
Okay. Could you please help me understand why then, if there's still ongoing, I'm just trying to understand the process. If you could please help me understand why that amendment, after agreement is reached, is not just added at the floor level. We could just go ahead and move this out today. I'm just confused.
I was going to ask that question, if this is something that could be, we could move this bill and that could, you could still work and can get that addressed and we could do it on the floor. But Chair Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Claiborne. I would like for that to be the case. And once I have some confidence that there's agreement and that that can happen, I believe we're ready for prime time.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you very much. So this bill, as I'm hearing it, the contents of this are ready to go, but that you are asking for other language that isn't in this bill to be attached. I'm just trying to understand the process. I'm sorry for my confusion.
Chair Torkelson, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what we don't know is whether or not there might be some fiscal impact from the amendment. Might be, might not. If there is, we cannot change the fiscal aspects of the bill on the floor. We are limited to the content of the bill when it arrives. So that's really the reason behind holding it at this time.
Chair Heisman.
Nothing further. Thank you. That covered it.
Representative Godfrey, would you like to make comments?
Yeah, sure. No, I appreciate it. And, you know, we were aware that, you know, this would likely possibly be a thing. You know, I think, you know, from my perspective, there are continued concerns with the amendment that there is being proposed going on. You know, we heard it within our conversation in the House Environment Committee, that there were pretty great concerns from members of our caucus on that. You know, there's a lot of talk about precedent. That word was thrown out quite a bit. You know, from my perspective, I'm always trying to look for ways to get to yes, like on particular bills. But you know, I don't want to like completely rule out anything ever. But it's been communicated to me pretty in no uncertain terms that the concerns about the proposed amendment that we do not have yet before us today are great enough that it's a non-starter for at least a lot of the folks in the House Environment Committee. You know, and so when I say that I want to pass a no non-controversial, no shenanigans bill, you know, there's a reason that particular piece of legislation was not included in the lands bill to begin with, because there was a great deal of controversy surrounding it. And so, you know, that's just kind of my two cents as to how this has happened. You know, I am always willing to continue having conversations. Ideally, this is a scenario that is resolved without legislation. And I think that is, you know, what I believe and what a lot of folks believe is that this is a scenario that is resolved without legislation, specifically because of the potential for litigation to be associated with that. Getting the legislature drawn up and all that is not something that I think is wise for us to be doing. So that's just my two cents, and I turn it back to the chair to continue member discussion.
Thank you, Representative Godfrey. Chair Torres, did you?
Oh, well, thank you. Just wanted to note that I am aware that the DNR and the concerned parties are meeting, I believe, Friday, sometime later this week. I believe it's Friday, to try and work this out. There may not be resolution to this issue. I understand it's somewhat complex, but the time would be very helpful.
To that point, Chair Heisman.
Again, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And fundamentally, there is a fairness issue at stake in addition to the issue I mentioned earlier. We need to make sure that Cayuta as a mountain bike trail system is fully open. And for those that have used it, I think we all understand how important that is, not just to the community, but of course to users. You never want to see a trail that says closed. And so we're trying to get to the point, as Representative Gottfried mentioned, that we may not even need legislation. There is that possibility. And those conversations are happening as we speak. So I appreciate the committee's, would ask for the committee's support in a delay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gottfried, did you want to add anything to that final point from Chair Heisman?
No, I think that's fine. I mean, I guess I defer to the, you know, the committee's judgment, the chair's judgment about this. Again, I firmly believe this is something that should be handled without litigation or without legislation. I do think that there is a precedent set with that if we were to add legislation to this that I think would be dangerous for not just the DNR and future people that have stakes with the DNR, but also the legislative body itself. So I would hope that all parties could continue to negotiate in good faith, whether or not there's a vote on this today. But I would hope that parties outside of the legislature would continue to meet and continue to work through this matter.
Thank you, Representative Godfrey. Thank you for all the discussion. We will continue to move forward, noting that there is a possible non-legislative fix for this. As a chair, I will say, invite me in if I can be helpful with that. I do like these bike trails, want them to be open. But we will take the, Chair Akam.
And can we get a roll call, please?
Roll call requested. It will be granted. So we will move forward. Any further discussion, members? No further discussion. I will renew the motion to place this bill on the, as amended. I will renew the motion to place House File 4138 as amended onto, oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, I'm on the wrong page. What's the number? I will renew the motion to place House File 4222 as amendment on the General Register. Clerk, please take the roll. Chair votes aye.
Chair Frazier.
Chair Frazier.
Chair Torkelson?
No.
Vice Chair Igbaje?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scott?
No.
Representative Acom?
Aye.
Representative Baker?
No.
Representative Bierman?
Aye.
Representative Gomez?
Aye.
Representative Heitzman?
No.
Representative Igo?
No.
Representative Cleborne?
Cleborne, aye.
Representative Cagle?
Aye.
Representative Cotiza Batun?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Crenshaw?
No.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
No.
Representative Noor?
Aye.
Representative Novotny? Representative Novotny?
I'm not here.
Oh. Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Rarick? Excuse me. Representative Schumacher? Representative Swidzinski?
No.
Representative Bang?
Aye.
Representative West?
No.
Representative Joachim?
Aye.
And I believe I missed Representative Backer.
No.
The ayes have it. However, based on our shared agreement, there must be a majority of committee members to vote aye to move this out of committee. So the bill will stay with us. and I hope we can get this worked out. Thank you, Representative Godfrey, for your presentation.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Claiborne.
May I just ask a point of clarification for anybody who might just be watching?
Yes, Chair.
When a bill is voted down in this committee, the bill stays with the committee. How does it come back before the committee? Screen back up.
Chair Nash, you want to add
something? If I could, Mr. Sullivan can help with this, but this happened in state government finance as well when a bill did not have a prevailing vote because of a lack of a vote from the other side. It is automatically held over as if it were being laid over.
Mm-hmm. And we, to bring it back, we would take a motion to reconsider.
You just bring it straight up.
We will have the opportunity to bring it back up.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to make sure that we all know what the rules are and we are all working on the same page. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Claiborne, and thank you, Chair Nash, for adding that as well. Up next, we have House File 3936. Chair Claiborne. Chair Claiborne, members, we will be hearing House File 3936, and we will be laying this bill over.
Chair. Mr. Chair, I would like a roll call on this vote, please.
Chair Claiborne has requested a roll call on this bill. Chair Claiborne, you will have to wait.
I just want to make sure I understand the rules.
Please. Chair Claiborne, please make the motion where you'd like your bill to go.
Thank you very much. I would move that House File 3936 be referred to the General Register.
Chair Claiborne has requested the House File 3936 be referred to the General Register. Chair Claiborne, please present your bill.
Thank you very much. This is an appropriation bill for public television stations for Greater Minnesota. It is a bipartisan bill. The bill would allow for a one-time appropriation of funds to $350,000 to Pioneer Public Television in Granite Falls, $475,000 to Lakeland Public Television in Bemidji and Brainerd, $650,000 to KSMQ in Austin and Rochester, $250,000 to PBS North in Duluth and Superior, and $200,000 to Prairie Public Television in Fargo, Grand Forks, Dickinson, and Wilson. When this bill was heard in state government, it moved without any concerns. We had great testimony from Greater Minnesota Public Television talking about the importance of allowing community members in Greater Minnesota to see themselves through the lens of public television. We talked about the importance of PBS to children as they grow and thrive in Greater Minnesota. And the purpose of this proposal is to make sure that PBS stations serving Greater Minnesota continue to stay relevant and viable for the communities they serve. The ability to continue this mission has significantly been impacted as a result of federal elimination of all funding grants for public television. When Congress eliminated the CPB funding last fall, Minnesota public television stations lost nearly $9 million. Greater Minnesota stations suffered the largest percentage of those cuts, as much as 30 to 40% of their operating funds that were previously authorized by Congress. If they do not receive this funding, we were told that these stations could go dark. This is a critically important bill. It should not be held up in any political gamesmanship, and I would ask that this committee please do the right thing and vote yes.
Do you have any testifiers?
Mr. Straczynski has, it's just me. It looks like it's just me.
All right, Chair Claiborne. Members, discussion to the bill. Chair Torkelson. I'll come back.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this reason that I'm going to suggest a no vote today is because this particular bill happens to be linked to a Senate omnibus bill that contains some things that are very controversial. I think I personally, and I believe most of my caucus members, believe the bill as it stands here in the House is acceptable, but it causes some problems. Now, you and I had a handshake, a public TV handshake that said no shenanigans. However, that is between us here in the House. It has nothing to do with the Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair, Chair. I was rolling over in it. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Chair Frazier. Chair Cleavorn. I just want to thank you for bringing this forward. As a mother of two kiddos that went to University of Minnesota Morris in Greater Minnesota, they relied on a lot for public television, just academically, and also for warnings and being linked to the community out there. I think it's really important, and I'm a little concerned we lay it over and not move it forward because something the other body is doing, because we all know the other body does some really dumb things sometimes. So with that, Mr. Chair, I hope we will consider moving this forward.
Thank you, Chair Youakim. Chair Claiborne?
Well, I have great confidence in my co-chair, Nash, to make sure that anything that the Senate puts in a bill that is controversial, that he has the ability to speak up and the agency to make sure that it doesn't get a yes vote on the House side. Oh, co-chair Nash and I worked very well together on the budget bill last year. We are a pretty strong team when we work together and row together. And so I would ask for Chair Nash to take confidence in his own ability and please vote yes for this bill.
Co-chair Nash, you want to?
Well, Mr. Chair, I do know how to say no quite well, and I'm going to follow the request of my chair here. We have plenty of time to get this done. I do believe this bill has a tremendous amount of merit, but I do not want to encumber it with some of the dross that comes over from the Senate. So thank you.
Chair Claiborne.
Members, please vote yes. It's a good bill. It's a clean bill. We've had no shenanigans with this bill. Please vote yes.
Seeing no further discussion, I will say, as a point of privilege as a chair, it does appear that we have broad agreement that this is a good bill. Despite what our Senate colleagues are doing, I hope we can get this figured out because I do think it's important. I spend quite a bit of time with my kids watching PBS, so it is. I know how important it is, and particularly in our places where we don't have large news media networks, it's very important. So I do hope we can get this figured out. But we will take the vote, and then we will hopefully revisit this to make sure we get it done before the session is over. Thank you, Chair Claiborne, for bringing it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Clerk, take the roll.
Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Chair Tolkison.
No.
Vice Chair Agbaje.
Aye.
Vice Chair Scott.
No.
Representative Acom.
Aye.
Representative Backer.
No.
Representative Baker.
No.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Gomez. Representative Heinzman.
No.
Representative Igo.
No.
Representative Cleavorn.
Aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Katiza Watun.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
No, thanks.
Representative Crenshaw.
No.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Representative Mueller.
Aye.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Noor.
Aye.
Representative Novotny.
No.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Swidzinski.
No.
Representative Vang. Representative West.
No.
Representative Youakim.
Yes.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
The ayes have it 13 to 12, but as I mentioned before, because of our agreement, it has to be a majority of the committee to move this bill forward. So the bill does, the motion is denied and it will stay with the committee, and I hopefully we can get this worked out prior to session ending.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Claiborne. Up next, we have House File 4138. Co-Chair Scott. Co-Chair Scott, I believe you're. Is your motion a recommendation to place House File 4138 on the General Register?
That is my motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Co-Chair Scott. Please proceed. Oh, there is an amendment. Do you want it up now or you want to?
Let's go ahead and do the amendment.
Okay. Would you like to move the amendment?
Yes, I would like to move the A5.
Co-Chair Scott has moved Amendment A5. Please describe the amendment.
So there's a large portion of it that is technical and makes clarifying changes from using the language of 15 years of age or over to just 16, up to 16. We've reinstated some language on 1.9 and 110 that just says that the covered social media platform shall retain documentation sufficient to reasonably establish it has obtained verifiable parental consent. And then the last part of the amendment is moving some language from one section to a different section.
Thank you, Co-Chair Scott. Any discussion of the amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment is adopted. Co-Chair Scott, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is Ways and Means, so I will say there's no fiscal note to this bill. Social media is consuming our lives. We know that social media platforms are addictive by design, and that is reflected in teen usage on social media. The Office of the U.S. Surgeon General reports that 95% of 13 to 17-year-olds are on social media platforms, and a Gallup poll found that teens spend on average 20% of their day on social media platforms. In the 2025 Minnesota Student Survey, nearly one in five Minnesota high school students, so that's 20% again, reported being on social media between the hours of 12 a.m. and 5 a.m., five school nights a week. Social media platforms target ads and content to users based on a variety of factors, including an estimate of age determined after time spent on the platform. I can't think of another product for which teens sign a contract, especially one which takes on average 20% of their day. When teens enter into this contract, the platforms monetize and sell the minors' data to other platforms and for targeted commercial advertising. As parents and as lawmakers, we should not be okay with that. We have the power to enforce consumer protections around products used by Minnesotans, especially kids. My remarks highlight just a brief overview of how youth are being exploited by unfair trade practices, and the legislature should require responsibility from platforms to protect Minnesota youth online. House File 3418 seeks to mitigate some of those practices with a twofold approach. Number one, covered social media platforms, as defined in the bill, which make over $1 billion in advertising revenues worldwide in one or more of the preceding years, must instead protect youth. And we do that by age estimation, and we do that by the second component, which is parental consent. So the way this bill would work, if a person under 16 has a social media account now, they would receive a warning that parental consent is needed. And that's the social media platforms would use the algorithms that they already use to estimate age to determine that kid could be in that category of being under 16. From there, they would ask for parental permission. If parental permission is granted, the whole look for that social media platform to that underage person would change. The addictive features would be gone. There would be no targeted commercial advertising. There would be no addictive features such as infinite scroll, autoplay, video, or metrics displayed, such as how many likes on their account. So that, in essence, is the bill. And then it does have a private right of action. And it also has enforcement by the Attorney General as well. And I ask for members' support, and I will take questions.
No testifiers?
No. But I would like to draw members' attention. You should have just received a letter that was passed out of support from the Annunciation Light Alliance, and that goes along with other testimony of support from the Minnesota Catholic Conference and With All, which is an organization that works with eating disorder victims and persons, and then a testimony from the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council the Division of Indian Work also supplied letters of support for the bill. Thanks.
Discussion, members? Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, usually I try to watch the bills as they go through committee before we see them, so I know what questions have already been answered. But with the private right of action, who is that private right of action available to? Is it parents? Is it, yeah, thank you.
Co-chair, Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, parents and kids.
Any follow-up, Chair Youakim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this all kind of works if parents actually step in and do it, right? I just want people to realize this isn't like the only silver bullet. There's a lot of other items that we have to do to get this to work.
Coach Scott.
I'm not sure I heard all of the question. If you could speak up a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to say this only works if parents or step in and actually use the parental controls. I don't want folks to think this is just a silver bullet. There's other items that we need to do to do some consumer protection around these social media platforms. Is that correct? It works because the parents have to step in.
Culture Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the parents have to step in one way or the other. They have to either give support, or if they don't give support, then that's the end of that. So.
Yeah. Culture, you okay? Members, any further questions? Chair Claiborne.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Scott, I thank you for the work that you're doing here. I think it's important. I don't serve on Commerce anymore, but I understand that in Commerce there was some concern about the amount of data that companies might be collecting to ensure that the law was being followed, right? So was that concern addressed in your amendment?
Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We tried to address that in I can't remember which. We first heard the bill in Judiciary, so we did have an amendment in the Commerce Committee, but we did reinsert the language that requires it's in the amendment. The covered social media platform shall retain documentation sufficient to reasonably establish it has obtained verifiable parental consent. That's the thing that they would need to keep some form in case they were sued that they actually had obtained parental consent. And in federal law, under the COPPA statutes, there's already established ways to do that, to get that parental consent and what it is that they're gathering or keeping. I'm pretty satisfied with the language as it is from a data standpoint. It also says in the bill that they can't sell that data, they can't share that data, they can't really do anything with it. It's only there for the purposes of verifying that they gave consent.
Chair Claiborne, any follow-up?
Just one follow-up.
Go ahead.
So that data that they're collecting, they can't sell it even if it's aggregated without identifiers? Okay.
Chair Scott?
No, for the record, you probably can't hear my head shake one way.
Thank you very much. And again, I appreciate your work on this.
Thank you. Thank
really
you for
topic.
The support. Yeah.
Any further questions, members? Seeing no further questions, Chair Scott, close.
Just would love to have your support. I've been very gratified by the number of people that have come onto this bill and really supported it. And it's all in an effort to protect our kids online. Just the other day on the House floor, we heard a bill about a young man that had taken his own life from being on a social media platform. There's about 100,000 hits against kids on social media every day that are either sexual harassment or they're doing sextortion, that sort of thing. And so this would protect our kids in some way from that too, as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Coach Scott. This is an important issue. Thank you for bringing this legislation to continue to work on it, protect our young people. I appreciate it. Members, with no further discussion, I will renew Chair Scott's motion to recommend for placement House File 4138 as amended on the General Register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Bill is passed. You're on your way.
Thank you.
That concludes our bills, but Co-Chair Torkelson, do you want to give a preview for what's up next?
Yes, I know how excited everyone is to meet tomorrow, 15 minutes after session. Might motivate some within the room to keep their speeches short and brief. at session, that is. The information, the meeting information for the committee meeting tomorrow is posted on the committee webpage. However, an error in the date of the meeting has happened, and we can't correct it because the LIFSIRV system is not working. I believe that the day is right, but the date is wrong, or vice versa.
The meeting tomorrow at 3?
We are meeting tomorrow at 3.
Can't correct the message because the system is down.
And we can't correct it because the system is down, but I look forward with great anticipation to seeing every one of your smiling faces tomorrow.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson, and I have very much, I appreciate your offer of a reason for no shenanigans on the House floor tomorrow to get here quickly and get our business done. With that, members, we are adjourned.